This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No ease. That's Blueberry, BLUBRRY.com. Blueberry.com.
Yeah, this is the official fight music anthem. If you see somebody you don't like, tell them stand up.
Hey. I hit him, then I split him, I get him for the dough. Pickpocket a nigga before I lay him across the floor. It's the Rock Town. You motherfuckers lay it down. We pound for pound. Illest niggas out ain't fucking around. This ain't the WCW or the NWO. It's reality. We're casually kicking your dough. Or we can switch to the Mortal Kombat. My niggas will come back, ready for combat. I spill it, spilling and killing these niggas is wrong. But what should I do? They tryna take me off my throne. I'll put my foot through the side of your head. Yeah, homies threw in the towel, they decided you dead. City decided to flare, but you decided to fight. Fight, one hit to the head, knocking out your lights. Lights. We can clash class, or we can clash crews. After we clash your mans, then we gon' clash you.
Hit that, nigga.
Kick that, nigga.
Talking that shit, better get back, nigga. Whack that, nigga.
Crack.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another edition of the Man Up Podcast. We're coming at you a little later than I wanted to. We didn't come at you with that preview episode last week that I really wanted to, but you know what? That's okay. Stuff like that happens. We got a little busy, and we didn't have a chance to get that going, but it doesn't matter because today's show is jammed-packed. We have two big reviews for you, of course, the Elite XC event and Dream 4. But of course, before I get into that, let me tell you, you know, who everyone is here. Of course, I'm Afton Sloan, the host, being joined as always by my brother Shane. How you doing today, man?
Doing pretty good. Just got back from seeing the Incredible Hulk earlier today. Good movie.
I have been hearing some good things about that, man.
Yeah, too bad you didn't get to go see it, because we don't actually live near each other, so we couldn't go watch it together, and I'm sure you're extremely jealous.
I have been known to, like the Marvel movies from time to time, but, I'm sure I'll see it. And
they've been incredibly good here recently. I mean, you have a couple stinkers every now and then. I mean, a couple kind of crappy movies like Ghost Rider, but then you get Iron Man and Hulk holding it down for some serious Marvel movie action.
Yeah, definitely. But as I said at the top of the show here, we got a jam-packed show today. We got two big reviews coming at you, so I don't really want to waste any time. So let's go ahead and get into some news I thought was rather interesting before we get into those big reviews. First bit of news is, a follow-up to something I reported last podcast. That was, of course, the Gods of War event that they were hyping as, quote, the biggest mixed martial arts event to ever happen on the East Coast. Well, unfortunately, it's canceled, or postponed, that is, with no, date for when it's going to happen again, so it could, in fact, never happen.
It's scheduled to coincide with Yama 2, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, both, in fact, never happening, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but, Kevin Randall and Jeff Monson, they both dropped out. So I guess that's probably likely the reason this was canceled. That was really going to hurt their drawing power and pay-per-view sales for that matter. But, it's so disappointing when you get to see that great card, man.
Yeah, what would make them think they should be on pay-per-view when, Dream is on HDNet, or even the IFL on HDNet? What would make them think
they were banking on those... those Jeff Monson and, Kevin Randleman fans. Now, granted, I'd kind of like to see Kevin Randleman, but Jeff Monson, not so much.
Kevin Randleman, not at all really excited about seeing him that much.
Yeah. Whatever. All right. Another shocking news. The UFC's a big announcement. It was supposed to go down today, and it was pushed back to tomorrow. Of course, Wednesday.
This just in, breaking news, Afton. The UFC's big announcement does not exist. It's a total lie and fabrication.
They're just going to keep pushing this back so no momentum or any kind of buzz can be built by any other promotion, man.
I think you may be onto something there. I mean, you know, they're trying to keep this big announcement out there, trying to kill the hype build around the Elite XC coming out this weekend or anything else, you know.
Yeah. So, all right. Stupid ads in the way of this next story. It's like gigantic and covering up the screen now, so I'm trying to... Okay, let's close that. Alright. Boss Rutan talks IFL Kimbo and BJ Penn. Legendary fighter and trainer Boss Rutan recently sat down with MMAU. What kind of website is that? To discuss a variety of topics, including his thoughts on Kimbo / BJ Penn and the IFL. He says on the IFL, it's shaky, right? I mean, everybody can see it. We're an open book because we're a public company. It's not going that good. But we have a strong fighters base. I think everyone looks good. I think the shows that we have, especially the last two shows, were all good. Especially the last show was really good, so that's not a problem. We thought CBS was going to help us. We kind of had high hope from Elite XC. Then the show was great. And everybody watched with the press afterwards, kind of killed it. They started talking about bad about it, which was very weird to me, you know, blah, blah, blah. So basically, I mean, he's kind of still trying to hold in there and say the IFL is going to make it through this. I highly doubt that. I think the IFL is pretty much done.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a good sign. their stock price right now, what, 3 cents a share or something ridiculously low like that? It's done. I mean, it's over, basically. And it's kind of sad.
As he goes on here, he says basically they were banking on the success of Elite XC to have other big-time networks be like, you know, we want mixed martial arts, and the IFL being in a ring with no elbows is a little more suitable for TV and larger audiences. But, I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
No company, basically, no one. See, here's the thing about the IFL, man. You know, the UFC lost a ton of money, too, in its early years. But the thing about them being a public company is everyone knows they're doing horrible. No one's want to invest in that or put any stock, you know, behind, you know, that, take the chance on them. When they see that company's like 2 cents a share, they know they're fucking just hanging on with fumes.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, dude, to never go public is probably a good idea.
Yeah, unless you're, you know, pretty huge, then you don't want to go public. I mean, I think UFC would be smart to probably not go public, though there is rumors that that they are, you know, thinking of doing just that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, to sum up what his thoughts on BJ Penn is, he basically calling him the most talented guy on the planet. He said that he blew him away with his boxing skills, and that, you know, he had only trained 3 years in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and had a black belt and went to Brazil and won the world championship ride. I think that if he trained like 6 months or a year, he's going to become the world champion boxing in his weight class. He's that good and talented. Wow.
Interesting indeed.
Yeah, so. Anyway, that's I still thought those are kind of some interesting Boss Rutan comments on, you know, a couple of things there. This next story is, you know, you can debate its, you know, credibility or not, but the following sprouted courtesy of the Miami Herald. What the hell? It's basically at the Hard Rock Casino Complex Saturday night. Porn star Jenna Jameson hosted a fifth annual lingerie party there. Her colleague Robert Santiago was there, and she told him that she had her boyfriend Tito Ortiz are trying to have a baby. Quote, it's the most important thing I want in my life right now, to have a baby, become a full-time mother, and live my life forever with Tito. So what are you thinking about the queen of porn, man, having a baby with Tito Ortiz?
I mean, who am I to stand in the way of love, Afton? That's just what I want to know. Who am I to, you know, to deny them a child if they want that, you know? If that's what they wanted to do, you know? Then...
Good Lord. Wow, let's hit some of this other stuff here at the end, man. You remember how we said Jenna Jameson basically had become, like, really thin and shit, man?
She, very skeletal, you know?
Here's a quote on that. Some people, when they are depressed and in pain, overeat. I just stopped eating. And I'm Italian and I love food, said Jameson, who said her weight dropped down to 93 pounds.
Yikes.
I am 105 pounds now, with my goal weight being 120. Jameson jokes she hopes that pregnancy will help spike her appetite.
So basically she's just getting, wants to have a baby just so she might be more hungry then? I mean, is that...
Yeah.
I don't know if that's
Lord,
the best
95 pounds.
That is pretty bad, though.
Anyway, that's just a throwaway story I thought I'd throw in there. Toronto, Ontario, basically, this is a press release about the Fight Network and Affliction announced a partnership. Okay, this is press release. There's absolutely nothing interesting here. But so basically, I guess the Fight Network and Affliction are just teaming up, and they're probably going to... cover Affliction band that will be coming out July 19th.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know. I guess that's for Canadian viewers in the Fight Network up there, man.
Yeah.
Anyway. So that was the news, you know. There's a couple of things in there I thought was kind of interesting. Some of it wasn't really, you know, the Jenna Jameson, you know, story was just kind of thrown in there. But, you know, let's go ahead and talk about the fights now. You know, that's probably why a lot of people are tuning in. You know, they don't want to know, you know, the latest porn gossip. They want to know the latest fights, man.
Maybe I zoned out here for a minute, but did you mention UFC rumored to be doing the show July 19th?
Oh, well, yeah, I there just wasn't anything really to report on it. You know, someone said they were doing a show July 19th. The rumored fight was, you know, Wanderlei Silva versus, you know, Brandon Vera, but that fight's been, you know, refuted. It's not going to happen. Wanderlei Silva doesn't want to fight that early. You know, so I guess the show's still going down at that time, but right now, I mean, it's just basically speculation.
So, speculation about Jenna Jameson having a child, okay. Speculation about a
well, the news site I was looking at didn't have anything like that, man.
Well, you're,
unless I just missed it.
If
but,
you're looking
you know.
At a, you're looking at the wrong news site, then.
Yeah.
Because you know, I was reading here on Fightline.com that both, you know, the rumor is the UFC on July 19th appears to have legs, this supposed show, but don't expect Wanderlei Silva versus Brandon Vera to fight one another in the main event. According to Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer, both men were contacted.
That's who I always go, dude.
Hey, the guy, he's a legitimate journalist, man. Both men were contacted about participating in the event, but talks, which were in the preliminary stages, have ceased, and the proposed match has been scrapped as Silva felt he didn't have enough time to prepare for Vera. That doesn't mean he's not going to fight, though. However, the UFC continues to scramble in order to put together a solid card, and an official announcement on the proposed card is suspected tomorrow, which is...
I actually just seen an update to this, man, to this story. You know, sometimes a lot of people will claim the internet forums are just there to throw out speculation and wild rumor, man, but maybe this source, you know, these are my sources, man, so maybe it's, you know, very accurate here. But apparently this guy's claiming that James Irvin is confirmed for that card to be fighting a big-time name who's coming up from the 185-pound division. Yes, of course. Anderson Silva, James Irvin, July 19th, man.
Hmm.
Well, I doubt that.
You don't think so? Well, I guess we'll find out if they ever decide that they're going to do anything and announce anything on from the UFC, you know.
Yeah, anyway. Like I said, let's talk about the fight. So we're talking about Elite XC's event, The Return of the King. We went down this past weekend. Of course, this was headlined by KJ Nunes defending his Elite XC lightweight title against Yves Edwards. Of course, that's the 160-pound title in Elite XC. So, I mean, what you kind of think about this card overall, man? I thought it was a pretty decent night of fights. You know, we had some good fights in there, some, you know, exciting finishes. But, you know, kind of what went down at the end, and of course we'll talk about that more in detail when we get to it, just kind of, you know, puts a sour note on it, you know, the whole evening.
Yeah, it's basically, you know, there was a couple of, basically a couple of showcase fights of, they Elite XC, really, they basically match people together to kind of put together lopsided fights where, you know, the guys they're wanting to push are going to come out on top. Then you get a couple decent fights in the end. I mean, I was looking forward to KJ Nunes versus Edwards. Thought that would be a pretty decent fight. And we got to, I mean, there were some exciting fights, but, you know, again, we'll have to see if any of these guys really turn out to be anything. I was sort of impressed by guys like Rafael Fajal. He looks decent. Dave Herman's got some potential. Obviously, Ninja looked extremely impressive. Got to kind of question the level of competition he was facing.
You're just ruining the rundown, man. Come on.
I didn't say who won any of these fights, you know.
Oh, he looked impressively getting his ass kicked then?
Some people do, man. Some people look impressive in defeat. But you can continue, yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, let's talk about these fights. Rafael Fajal, you know, the aforementioned there by Shane, was taking on Wayne Cole. And, you know, this was over quickly, folks. Fajal totally just outclassed Cole. He was pounding him with his strikes. I think he hit an illegal knee shot to the groin at one point. But when they started it back, basically he dropped him with a knee and jumped on him, pounded him out, got his back, and just started raining in some punches until Mario Yamazaki had to call it at 2:47 of the opening frame. Windmill destruction, beat down there for Rafael Fajal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, the fight, you know, let's talk about the more interesting thing that actually happened after the fight. Man, your boy, you know, of course everyone knows you host the old pro wrestling podcast over there, so you're very familiar with this man. You know, of course, one Bill Goldberg, man. So, what did you think about Goldberg's actions there after the match?
Goldberg, not the best commentator in the world. He basically was kind of insulting to Fajal. He opens up by saying, "Look, now."
What are you talking about? Wasn't Goldberg always known for his charisma in the pro wrestling world?
Not exactly. He was just known for, you know, spearing somebody and giving them a jackhammer. That's pretty much it.
All right.
And his signature walkout, you know.
Yeah.
But he basically, yeah, I mean, he tells Fajal, like, I know you can't speak English too well, so, you know, just do your best or whatever. Something
no,
like,
he didn't even say that, dude. I mean, you're giving Goldberg some credit here. He's like, I know your English isn't too great, you know, so I won't even ask you to do the, you know, the post-fight talk-through.
Yeah,
man.
He's like, just stand here and watch it with me or whatever.
Yeah.
He did say that, didn't he? Wow.
And then that guy goes to actually do it and do it very well, you know. I mean, he speaks perfect English. Well, not perfect, but, you know, it's very good. I mean, you have
Asshole.
To be a complete
Absolutely.
Moron not to understand what he was saying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's just Goldberg being Goldberg, I guess.
Well, basically, Goldberg would have one of these issues after every fight. So this isn't the last time we're going to be talking about, you know, Mr. Goldberg here.
I think pretty sure Rafael Fajal probably could speak English better than Goldberg could.
Yeah. So anyway, let's move on here. Of course, Dave Herman taking on, a member of the power team,
the H2O
man, Waterman, of course, Ron Waterman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask you a question. If your last name is Waterman, is that the best nickname you can come up with, H2O man? That just seems like the worst nickname ever. hey, your last name's Waterman. That's like H2O, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, let's talk about this fight. Basically, Herman dominates Ron Waterman yet again, as in the first one. He does this crazy, like, jumping left, hook kick right to the side of the head of Ron Waterman. They would have probably knocked him out if it actually landed, you know, cleanly. He didn't get all of it. Then I think he hurts him with a liver shot to a knee to the liver that drops him. He mounts Waterman and just fucking, you know, punches and elbows the crap out of him until it's over. 2:19 in the first round, another dominating stoppage. And I felt sorry for Ron Waterman, who literally didn't look like he knew where he was at once they were trying to, you know, pick him up off the canvas.
Dude, I just find it very hard to root against Ron Waterman. I mean, how can you not root for a guy, man, who's ripping phone books in half and been in steel bars in the name of Jesus to try to save the heathen youth of America, man? How can you not be behind this guy, seriously?
That's true, man, you know.
That said, he got absolutely knocked into next week by Dave Herman, who, I mean, again, he's another guy who's got an impressive record. I mean, he's knocked a lot of people out, but against some questionable competition. Ron Waterman, probably the biggest name he's beaten, and that's not really saying that much. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what he can do. He's a heavyweight, so that's not a very – I think this was a heavyweight fight before I looked like a total idiot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, that's what I thought. But anyway, it's not a very deep division, so, you know, I don't see any reason why he can't go on to have a little success, you know?
Yeah. All right, again, like I said, the most interesting thing happens after the fight's over. And of course, that's when Bill Goldberg enters the cage. Again, very insulting, Bill Goldberg points out that, it's very impressive. Dave Herman's very impressive, considering he hasn't, you know, ditched his trainers and got with a real team yet.
Yeah, I mean, Goldberg being Goldberg, I guess.
Yeah, so, that's rather insulting to that guy's corner and stuff. And then he goes on to claim that Dave Herman's new nickname is Dave the Blueberry Muffin Herman.
Yeah, well, didn't Dave Herman call himself that or something like that? He's like, my new nickname, I wanted to be Blueberry Muffin.
I think Goldberg had something to do with that, man. This sounds like a lame gimmick he come up with, dude.
I guess.
So, hey, yeah.
Do you like Dave Herman? I'm pretty sure, was it Dave Herman or was it Fejo? Let me look here.
What? Just ask me and I'll tell you.
Yeah, did Herman pull out the can opener, man?
I don't know.
Well, it was in one of these fights. It was either the Fejo Wayne Cole fight or the I'm thinking it was Dave Herman here against Ron Waterman, dude. He was trying to work that can opener neck crank, man. And why, you explain to me why they call it the can opener.
I think only a can would let that happen to him and would actually, you know, get submitted by it and shit.
Yeah, but I just thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, so, anyway.
Tony Bonello here in the next spot.
Oh, what were you trying to jump the gun?
I'm going to take charge on this one, man. Tony Bonello in the next
spot. You know a lot about this guy's work, man. He comes from the same field.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the expert on pro wrestling, so I think I should talk about Tony Bonello here, taking on Marillo Ninja Hua. Tony Bonello, God, this man is just, let's see here. He's won every fight he's fought in, except for he had a draw against some guy named Ryan Stardy. First round submission almost every fight. I mean, this guy's just, he apparently is the most dangerous jiu-jitsu fighter on earth, man, coming out of out of Australia. And from what I understand, he fought Dan the Beast Severin, former NWA World Champion. Severin hit a sick release belly-to-belly suplex, throwing Bonello halfway across the ring. Bonello just set up like the Undertaker.
No, here's how it happened. I think he hit that belly-to-belly suplex, and he actually flipped over, landed on his feet, and then jumped on Severn's back, and that's how he got the rear naked choke submission.
Wow.
136 of the first round.
But it's the old, like, release German, but they land on their feet. Yeah. That probably was how it ended. So I like it, some of the guys. Look at this stiff competition he's been fighting.
T-Bone.
And King of the Cage 22 took on T-Bone. And another one of my favorites, Tony Bonello, has taken on. Would be
Gumjar,
man, at XFC2, man. Gumjar. Let's see what Gumjar's been up to. I mean, I wonder what he's been. Oh, his only fight ever is against Tony Bonello. Wow, I can't believe that. But yeah, Tony Bonello. All joking aside, he's said to have some decent skills. I mean, he's not like totally untrained, but basically the guy I think is a product of basically worked MMA fights, because he's coming from Australia, where I believe the mixed martial arts scene not really that big, so maybe they decide
that's like totally underground, although it's not anything sanctioned at all.
So maybe they decide they're going to spice it up a little bit by having some flat, you know, pro wrestling style endings and stuff. But anyway, he gets in there with a solid fighter like Murillo Ninja Hua, and basically just Hua worked him like he was some sort of rookie, man. He gets on top and he punishes Tony Bonello, and
you should have told what happened at the stare down, dude.
Yeah,
that probably really fired him up.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Bonello talking a lot of shit. He apparently made some sort of remark like, I'm going to,
he's like, screams out, fuck you, monkey, like that.
Yeah, something like that. So, Murillo had every reason to just destroy this guy, and that's exactly what he did. He basically gets into the knee on belly position, which is a very dominant position, and then pounds the hell out of Bonello until referee Mario Yamasaki shows a little mercy on him. 3 minutes, 16 seconds of the first frame. The ninja has returned to his winning ways and is putting himself in line for a possible rematch down the road with the winner of the Scott Smith Robbie Lawler fight.
Yeah, definitely. All right. I think we can go ahead and move on here to the next fight. Of course, we're talking about Nick Diaz, the often controversial.
Well, let me just interject here real quick. One final thing about Ninja. I think a great matchup for Elite XC to make would be Murillo Ninja Hua versus Joey Villasenor, man. That would be like a
come on, man. I was thinking Ninja versus Baroni, man.
Yeah, I think our listeners, you know, the couple emails we got about Phil Baroni pretty much sum up everyone's sentiments on that guy.
What about, dude, Phil Baroni made a post on the internet somewhere that he said that, you know, he's going to keep training and stuff, but he thinks that he could beat Anderson Silva, dude.
Yeah, keep on dreaming.
Well, you like that Phil Baroni? Such a clowner, man. That guy's hilarious.
Yeah, seriously, man. I think he and Joe Rogan can make a good duo act, man, for stand up.
Yeah. Anyway, man, let's talk about Nick Diaz versus Mushin Corporate.
Let me just say, I hate Nick Diaz. The guy's now my anti guy. Him and his brother Nathaniel, both my anti guys.
Yeah, Nick Diaz. You know, he is like often controversial. You know, he's a very big advocate for you know, marijuana.
I've been
clearly
smoking
the guy,
a little pot.
You know, clearly the guy's a daily user.
And he looks it too. He looks like he's just out of his mind, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, and he looks like he's fighting underwater anymore.
I think he's, you know, he's just like one of those. You remember that video game, dude, where like Pop would give you the power ups? You go
Bullet
into weed time.
Yeah. That game was called Narc, by the way. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. All right, so he's in weed time. He fights in weed time, dude. And this went the distance, and you know, I don't know. Diaz, number one, let's talk about we can't
basically
gloss this over. He basically, you know, he missed weight without missing weight.
Basically, this looked like, if you want to give a wrestling analogy, it looked like Rey Mysterio Jr. versus Kevin Nash. I mean, he's like he's fighting a child.
Okay, it didn't look that bad.
It was pretty bad, though. Nick Diaz missed weight by 9 pounds.
Well, see, technically, you know, quote-unquote, he didn't miss weight. But, yeah, but it was supposed to be a 165. That's what it was coming into it. He came in at, like, 169 pounds.
Yeah, and his opponent, Lucien Corbett, come in at, like, I mean, I think he weighed in
at
163, but...
You know, that's just because he just didn't cut. You know, he could have easily made it.
This is a guy that's, like, typically used to probably fighting at 155, easily fighting at 155. I mean, he talked about how I think he had wanted to become the 160-pound champion and then drop down and win the 150-pound title if they ever decided to crown a champion. And the 150-pound being, I guess, the Elite XC featherweight division. So this guy, he could probably, I mean, if he really cut, he could probably make 145.
Yeah.
Small dude, and he's not really that tall at all. Nick Diaz, just like I said, he towered over this guy. Nick Diaz was essentially a welterweight. He came in right at, you know, 170 pounds was the welterweight limit, and he just looked physically imposing compared to Lucien Corbett.
Yeah, I mean that's a complete joke, dude. I mean, Gary Shaw and Elite XC, they got to get something done down there. I mean, they literally got just make, they don't even have to make weight. You know, they're just going to have it a catch about. You know, it's all these big names that Gary Shaw has. I mean, he's not going to discipline. He's not going to kick them out. Well, that's all he has, man. So it's basically just like, it was right, dude. Remember those comments Gary Shaw said he runs his company just like a jungle and he lets his fighter run free like animals, man?
Yeah.
That's kind of what it's like, man.
Well, I think Nick Diaz has been doing a little too much grazing, pretty much.
You know, those fighters are just fucking running through jungles, man, free as they can be. They're doing whatever they want.
Well, let me just say this, too, as well. What is up with all the fighters missing weight? I mean, it was like a total, like, you never heard anybody really miss weight. You just had, you know, Travis Luter, he missed weight for that fight. That was, like, the only one.
It's like, you only tune in to the weigh-ins. You're not expecting, like, oh, man, is someone going to not make weight? You just kind of tune in. It's like, hey, man, I wonder what's going on.
I wonder,
guy get an occultation or get, like, a heated stare down or something.
But anymore, man, it's like, you know, you don't know if they're going to make weight or not. It's a real, like, you know, crapshoot out there. It started with, you know, I guess you could say the new wave started with Gina Carano, which, I mean, that's nothing new. She never makes weight. But then you had Thiago Alves just like a couple weeks later missing weight. Mm-hmm. And then now just, you know, a week or two removed from Thiago Alves missing weight. Here we have, you know, Nick Diaz missing weight again. So it's becoming an epidemic, man, in high-level mixed martial arts fights, people missing weight and missing weight badly.
Yeah. So let's quickly talk about the fight. Like I said, it does go the distance. Basically, Nick Diaz just wins a boxing match. They never tried to really take to the ground. There was never, you know, them doing anything down there. They clinched a few times, but basically it was just a three-round boxing match. And, you know, Diaz, you know, was winning all the rounds. And I don't know, it just seemed like the guy was just, maybe it's something where the guy's stoned while he's trying to fight. He just looks like you know, he just has this weird glazed look on his face. It looks like he's in slow motion in there. I don't know. But he did beat Lucien Corbett at that, you know. And he was landing, you know, more shots and stuff. It just, you know, just maybe the way the guy looks or something, or maybe your perspective on it makes you think he's not really going at it as hard as he can. But,
well, according to, you know, Mauro Ranallo and Steven Quadros, he's just got that methodical style, you know. Where, I mean, maybe part of it's that, but also I think part of it's just he looked slow, you know. He looked out of shape. Did he even give any kind of bullshit excuse for why he didn't make weight? I mean, you know, at least, you know, Thiago Alves said he'd sprained his ankle or something.
I don't think Nick Diaz
didn't even pretend. Like, he basically just said, look, I didn't even try. You know, I don't give a shit. I'm Nick Diaz. I beat Gomi, so I think I can just live off that the rest of my life, you know. or something, I guess. But I, to be honest with you, I don't think he deserves a rematch with KJ Nunes. Not he, much like Thiago Alves, I think he needs to make weight.
So let's talk about that, though. You know, let's talk about Bill Goldberg again. You know, rearing his you know, ugly head again in here.
His balding head.
Goldberg gets, well, he, yeah, I mean, he's bald for a reason, though. Goldberg gets in the cage, you know, he starts coming over to the guys. He asks him, I forget what he asked him, probably about his fight. Basically, Nick Diaz just thanks his trainers, and then he proceeds to want to leave the octagon, not the octagon, but leave the cage, and that's when Goldberg, who, you know, as you know, always just, like, tries to hug up to the fighters and, you know, put his arm around them and try to act all tough. He's like, whoa, whoa, hold on there, big guy, and literally starts pulling him back.
Yeah,
and then I think he asked him something else, you know. And, you know, Dick Diaz just had this glazed over look in his face where he didn't know where he was. He was just somewhere else. You know, his eyes, it looked like there was nothing behind him, man. There's nothing going on back there.
Here's my impression of Bill Goldberg. Well, I'm here with Nick Diaz, hair post fight, and Nick, you know, I know you've been smoking a little pot before the fight, but if you can take a look at those glazed eyes up here at the screen and talk us through this fight, that's pretty much a Bill Goldberg post fight, you know, an analysis, if you will, interview. But yeah, I mean, he was just, he didn't know where he was at. I mean, he was just trying to wander off, I mean. And do we even say, I mean, by the way, for anybody who cares, you know, Nick Diaz, he won this fight via TKO, by the way. He actually got full mount and reined in some punches on Moose and Corberay and got the victory. I was really rooting for Corberay, man. I wanted to see this guy just destroy Diaz, but you kind of knew it wasn't going to happen. The thing is, though, as much as we criticize Nick Diaz, the guy is, when he wants to be, the guy is very good. I mean, he's a high-level jiu-jitsu, you know, practitioner. He's got a Grace belt, a black belt under Caesar Gracie. You might as well just call it the Gracie belt because, I mean, that's how, you know, prestigious it would be. So the guy is good. And to be honest with you, KJ Nunes should have never beat him. Pretty much, that's my opinion. KJ Nunes should have never beat him. He beat him by cut.
Wow, dude! I was just reading the write up for what happened in this main event, dude. I definitely got to read that, man.
All right, but you know, just to kind of summarize, yeah, I mean, he beat him with a cut, and KJ Nunes, a very inexperienced fighter, but he got the win, like I said, via cut. Nick Diaz has had scar tissue. He had surgery. They talked about this. He had all these scar tissue around his eyes removed. If you know anything about boxing, you know, or just, you know, also it's very prevalent in mixed martial arts as well. You get a lot of cuts around your eyes. That scar tissue builds up, and it's very easy to open that back up. He also had his eyebrows shaved down as well, so I guess they wouldn't be quite as sharp. So I don't expect him to get beat via cut again by KJ Nunes. It will be interesting to see, you know, that rematch. Go ahead, though, and tell us.
I just want to kind of interject it here for the main event, dude. Apparently, now it is official. MMArated.com is reporting. This is breaking news. Anderson Silva versus James Irving, official for the July 19th bout. This will be Anderson Silva's first foray into 205 pounds, man.
Where does this at?
MMArated.com.
Can we now? I mean, that's like, I mean, that'd be like us reporting on something. I've never heard of this site before,
yeah,
man.
No, dude, I think it's pretty. Well,
we'll see. I mean, I guess, you know. I mean, don't you think that would be on UFC.com or something, or?
Nah, they're not going to report that. They're kind of shooting ahead, man. But, you know, this site has, you know, broke some other stories before that have been true, like Chuck Liddell being injured and stuff like that. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. I mean, sometimes these stories are wrong, but, you know, that is a source that's claiming that is, in fact, official now.
If that is true, you know, if that is, in fact, true, I guess that's a pretty interesting fight. I don't know why Anderson Silva would want to fight at 205, really. I mean, I don't think he's going to have any trouble being James Irvin, but that said, I mean, could we see him just being the first forte into possibly moving up for a fight against, you know, the winner of Forrest versus Rampage or something? Mm-hmm. We'll have to see. But go ahead and tell us about this Nunes-Edwards fight.
Let's talk about this main event. Of course, Eve Edwards is coming in. He had, you know, they were telling a story about how he got cut from the UFC after losing, I think, 6 out of 8 fights or something like that. But he was on a nice little win streak here. He's training down an American Top Team. He's looking very impressive lately. So he gets the title shot at KJ Dunes, a guy who no one really thought that he should ever have won that title. You know, they certainly didn't expect him to beat Nick Diaz for it. It was a shock when he did. You know, this is the same guy that people, you know, will point out that got knocked out by fucking Crazy Horse, man, Charles Bennett, okay? That's like getting knocked out by just some guy off the street because he, quote, doesn't train, man, okay? He admits that he never trains. He's just some guy that's in and out of prison, you know? He's basically Kimbo Slice. He's like a lightweight Kimbo Slice that fucking knocked him out.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, so Nunes, to sum up this fight early, he destroys Eze Edwards. He pounces him, he knocks him down, pounces on him. It's just a flurry, fucking wild man punches that literally just beat Eze Edwards into oblivion. It stopped at 48 seconds to open his stand. Eze Edwards doesn't know what the fuck happened to him. He don't know anything. He's cut up. I mean, he's dazed, confused. I mean, he's literally didn't even know the fight. He had a fight that night or something, you know, because later on in the press conference or the post-fighter, you know, little thing they did, he claimed that he, like, didn't remember any of that stuff that was happening on the, you know, video screen.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was probably, at first I kind of thought maybe he was upset or just disappointed. Because I didn't know him, but I was like, was he really out, you know?
What? Was he really out? Dude, I mean, he was getting destroyed.
He was getting beat pretty good.
If someone got up and argued that, man, I would just, like, lose all respect.
I'm not saying it was a bad stoppage at all. I'm just saying, you know, a lot of people, they'll say, you know, hey, I wasn't out or whatever, you
That's
know?
That's like, if you pulled a fucking tiger off me, dude, that was eating me alive, and I was like, buddy, I wanted some more of that, buddy, bring it on. That's how it was,
well, that's
dude.
How
that guy was just all
are,
over
dude.
Him, man.
I mean, they could be, you know, knocked out cold, dude, and they'd swear up and down that they weren't, you know? But he didn't even try to argue it at all or whatever, you know? Because, I mean, it wasn't like he was just, like, out cold, and he was just laying there, arms spread to the side, and just not even moving. Like, it wasn't like that kind of – it wasn't like freaking Sakuraba getting –
He probably got knocked out, like, 8 or 9 times during that, man, get knocked back, you know, get woke up.
But anyway, yeah, he said – like you said, he just admitted, hey, you know what? I had no idea what the hell hit me, basically. I was totally shocked for KJ Nunes to win this. Again, though, I mean, what did this really prove? I mean, I guess at some point, you know, you got to quit calling a guy a fluke or something, but what has he really proven throughout his mixed martial arts career? He's not really got a ton of big wins. He beat Edson Berto, the guy that Eze Edwards had defeated in his last fight. He beat Nick Diaz, but it was kind of via cut. I think Nick Diaz probably would have beat him if it had went the distance, perhaps.
I don't know, dude. I think he was getting beat down in that fight. He was getting beaten standing up, you know. He would have definitely had to took him down to win. I think KJ Nunes on the feet, dude, has got some, you know,
he throws
some nasty hands.
I think the guy's a dangerous striker, but, you know, again, you got to be a complete fighter, and I don't know that he is. I was looking for Yves to test him, to use that thug jitsu, and to really see what...
Here's the thing about Nick Diaz, dude. Lately, he's shown that he didn't really want to go to the ground. He just wants to box people, man. I mean, he did that in Dream.
Well,
in his fight.
That's because he's been taking on some guys that probably aren't up to his level, maybe, in some ways. And then, hell, you know, the guy is just a burnout, you know, a total stoner. He probably just like, hey, you know, I'm just going to get in there and bang. If he was smart, I'll just put it this way. If he was smart, he would take people to the ground as good as a jiu-jitsu fighter as he is. And if it came down to it, I'm sure he would do that. If he was, you know, if he thought he was going to lose a fight, you know, he wouldn't just stand there and bang it out for 5 rounds in a championship fight or something. But
yeah. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on here because we got a whole another show to talk about. But let's talk about this altercation that went down afterwards. Of course, we're talking about when the Diaz brothers were brought into the ring by none other than Bill Goldberg. You know, it looked like Goldberg was all excited, dude. He knew something was going down, or you know, something like that. You know, he was all giddy. This was like a pro wrestling days back.
I mean,
you know,
yeah, this was just Nitro all over again for him.
So the Diaz brothers gets in there. You know, they asked him, you know, about a title shot. I think KJ Noons asked the crowd if he should get one, and they just boo him. And then, you know, you could hear, you can see, you know, Noon Sr. like arguing with someone in the back. You know, you can hear them in the back yelling at the Noon's posse, you know, saying shit and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, we see Carl Noon's just go crazy. He bursts towards the fucking Diaz brothers. You can't really see it. It's off camera, but all hell's breaking loose. You see a bunch of other people start rushing the cage. You know, I'll just read you here the play-by-play here from Sherdog that claims what happens here. It says, the champions far, Carl Noon's voiced his approval and then attacked a member of Diaz's entourage afterwards and hand gestures were traded. Noon's corner man was seen throwing punches. Carl Noon's put Nick Diaz in a Muay Thai clinch, but it was broken up quickly. Diaz exited the ramp with his brother Nate, a lightweight contender in the UFC, getting the last words in before being forced backstage by security. I just thought that was very interesting, dude. You know, KJ Noon's dad had Nick Diaz in the fucking Muay Thai clinch. There, he's about to drop some sick knees, man.
Yeah. Well, following this, the MMA website, Sherdog.com caught up with KJ Noon's father, and he had...
Yeah, I was going to say that, man. Go ahead and hit that audio.
He had a lot of stuff to say about him, but this was one. Basically, this just sums it up. He gives you the bottom line on these Diaz brothers right here.
Bottom line is major disrespect. Last thing I ever thought would ever happen, you know, after my son winning a great fight. But the bottom line is on record, those Diaz brothers are just punks from, you know, Stockton, and they got no respect, and they're just punks, and just hope we don't see them out tonight.
Wow. He said, I hope we don't see them out tonight. Big words from KJ Noon's dad.
Hey.
KJ Noon's dad, former washed-up boxer, man.
You know what's funny?
What?
Late-breaking story here that I didn't go over until now. Quote, Nick Diaz has second run-in with KJ Noon's. Later that night, apparently these guys had a run-in at the hotel, man. And I'll just go ahead and start quoting Nick Diaz. By the way, Nick Diaz... this was an interview that he did with Kevin Aoli to clear things up. Basically, he says about their confrontation, I think it was on Monday, he says, quote, my car pulled up in front of the hotel, and he and his girlfriend and his mom and dad were there, Diaz said. Right away, he put his mug on me. He was staring me down and trying to give me the impression that he's hardcore. I flipped him off, but he's standing over there like he's flashing. I go, what the fuck are you doing? I'm not even the one doing shit. Okay, I'm just trying to fill these expletives in, man. Well, what I think he was saying here. I couldn't understand why this guy's putting his mug on me. So, he got like his mug of beer or something, dude? Is he like trying to put it on him as a fucking coaster? But he had to act like he was some kind of fucking tough guy in front of his girlfriend and his dad. This is war. This is life. And I take this very seriously, Diaz said. I'm not the one bringing my family into the ring and showing them off. I'm not the one who showed up in the post-fight news conference in a fucking suit trying to act like I'm some kind of tough guy. Fucking rich kid. This is war to me, and we have a serious situation on our hands now. We're going to war, and it's going to be bloody.
Wow.
Wow. What about that, man?
That's very strong words again there from this heated rivalry. I mean,
dude, you should see the picture of this on this story, man. He just looks like he didn't know where he is in here either. I think he just always looks like that, man.
He probably does. He probably does. Something that, I guess, did we miss this announcement or something? They dropped it during the show, you know, last night. July 26, 2008, Elite XC returns to CBS, man, for a big show live, again on CBS primetime. It's a return bout for the middleweight championship. Robbie Lawler versus Scott Smith 2. There was some rumors that Scott Smith had broken his foot. That was, fortunately for him, that was not true. It was just some strained ligaments, and his foot's healing pretty well. He's also, his eye and everything is fine. So they're ready to do it again July 26th, a lot earlier than I thought. There was a lot of reports that said that there wouldn't be another, Elite XC on CBS until probably towards the end of the year, but probably because the ratings did so well, man, for this for the first event, CBS was like, put another card together and we'll get you out there next month. So next month, July 26, 2008, middleweight championship rematch of Lawler versus Smith 2 should be an excellent fight. It's going to headline the card, and I can't, obviously I can't wait for it, but that's all that they have officially announced so far for this show. A Nunes versus Diaz fight, obviously in the making. Probably not going to make it that soon, though. There's not enough time, obviously, to get ready for a fight like that for this next CBS show. But I would definitely bet that we'll be seeing KJ Nunes versus Nick Diaz on CBS. Probably their third, CBS show, I would bet.
Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and transition here to Dream 4. We might have to be, a little quick with this. I don't want this podcast going that long. Not another 2-hour extravaganza like we had one time. But anyway, let's talk about Dream 4. Of course, it's the second round of the middleweight Grand Prix. And, some various undercard fights to take up the space. We had one lightweight second round Grand Prix matchup that was happening, of course, because Shinya Oki had got injured in that first one and then couldn't fight on such short notice in Dream 3. So he's facing Katsuya
Nagata.
Nagata here in Dream 4. And Aoki, this was total domination again. Someone that, Nagata clearly showed that he had little to no idea what to do on the ground with a guy like Shinya Aoki. He got top position. He mounted him like it was nothing. And he put on a body triangle and just really locked himself into that mount and stayed in it for a good, almost 4 minutes straight. And he pulls off the Loca Plata, man. Of course, that is the mounted go-go plata from the top. A very rare submission that's hardly ever seen in MMA. You have to be extremely flexible to pull it off. And, and the thing that people really don't know is why you don't see a lot of them is because it's relatively simple to defend against. But this just shows again how overmatched Nagata was. He gets tapped out by that. Very impressive sub. And hits over at 5-12 of the first round.
Yeah. Shane Aoki's just rolling through this tournament right now. I mean, probably the toughest competition he'll have in the entire tournament. He beat in the first round when he beat Jay-Z Calvin Conti. There's certainly some other good guys in that. I mean, there's going to be some good fights.
Dude.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie Alvarez.
I think Alvarez, if he can keep it standing, dude, he'll bang that guy into next week on the feet, man.
Yeah, Kawajiri also in it. And then Cal Uno. I think he could take Cal Uno pretty easy. But either Kawajiri or Eddie Alvarez would be a decent fight. But I think Shinya Aoki has got to be the odds-on favorite right now. He did just destroy Nagata. And the thing is, it's not really that impressive of a win because, I mean, he didn't really beat anyone
I think he was like an 8-1. He was an 8-1 favorite in it. So
yeah, but when you're in a fight with someone like that, someone who you're clearly better than, this is a way you need to win it. You need to dominate them, and you need to pull off a submission that you just never see. So even though it was an extreme mismatch, he still made it very impressive by using the you call it the Loco Plata.
Yeah.
So very, very impressive, and this is a good start to a great card, really. Great night of fights. Now, I know up in this second fight, you were very impressed by this next man here stepping into the cage.
This next fight was a heavyweight showdown. Of course, we had Alistair Overeem, the Strikeforce heavyweight champion, coming off his last fight when he won that Strikeforce title. Of course, he beat Paul Buntello. He's taking on Tae Hyung Lee. Of course, this is a super heavyweight Tae Hyung Lee, who weighed in at 295 pounds. Man, very big boy. This was, again, total destruction, man. Alistair Overeem, of course, he's a Dutch fighter. So, I mean, anytime some guys from Holland, you basically know that these guys can really bang, man. I mean, world-class kickboxing over there.
Yeah, the greatest kickboxers in the world are from Holland, basically.
Yeah.
And some of the best.
He knocked him the fuck out in 36 seconds. I think he hit him with, like, two shots and a knee before that guy. I think the first one knocked him out, but he hit him with another shot and a knee shot before he ever actually fell over.
Yeah.
Man, that's just how dominating it was.
And Tae Hyung Lee, he was not putting – he was a super heavyweight. This guy stood in at, like – I mean, what was he? He was, like, 6'6" at least or something, or 6'8".
Yeah.
And he weighed in at nearly 300 pounds.
He wasn't 6'8". I think it was, like, 6'6", 6'5".
Yeah.
And, he was 6'6", weighed 295.
I don't know, dude. Alistair Overeem, according to Sherdog here, is 6'5" himself. And I'm pretty sure
that guy was like an inch taller than him.
Well, he looked a lot taller than that to me, but I don't know. Anyway, he still had a 70-pound weight advantage over Alistair Overeem. It didn't matter, though. I mean, he was totally outmatched by a world-class striker like Alistair Overeem, who, like I said, he probably knocked him out three times before he hit the ground.
Yeah.
And what about Overeem, post-fight, throwing down the gauntlet, calling out Mirko Krokop, man? Wow, would that be a good fight, you think? Overeem versus Krokop?
That would definitely be, that'd be a very interesting fight, man, to see those two guys fucking bang it out on the feed, man, because that's exactly what would happen.
I think it'd be a catch-as-catch-can style fight. It would be a grappling match, you know, probably a jiu-jitsu display.
Yeah.
I
think these guys are going to bang, man.
Clearly, I'm being sarcastic. It would just be a stand-up war.
Yeah, definitely. Anyway, let's now move on here to the third fight. Of course, we're talking about the next generation of fighting Gracies, man. They just keep producing these kids. We're talking about Halleck Gracie taking on Avutin Gadzhaviev.
Yeah, Gadzhaviev. I don't. Gadzhaviev.
This is the only time I need to mention this guy's name. Basically, Halleck Gracie, by the way, just has the most robotic and stiff stand-up I've ever seen in my life. Dude, this guy looked like an action figure that some kid was doing, like, stop-motion, photography to move him around the fucking ring, man. His upper body didn't move at all, and his legs were just the ones moving forward, man.
Yeah.
Okay, his fists were locked in that position, and his only attack was some lame-ass front kick, dude, that anybody with any kind of skill could have countered that. So, this guy he's taking on was a can, let's just be honest. Halleck Gracie didn't look impressive at all on the feet, but he didn't need to. He gets him down and basically arm bars him and taps him out. Of course, a Gracie is going to be a submission, master on the ground. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And I think after the fight, he still hyped up his submission grappling match with Krokop. I think... the news must be a little slow over there. That ain't supposed to happen, or maybe it's going to happen again or something like that.
Yeah, I mean...
Let's talk about this next fight, though, which could have been maybe the best fight of the night. Of course, Hideo Tokoro versus Darren Yumanyama. Was this the fight, dude, that you were trying to claim that one of these guys was homeless, man?
I don't know. Yeah, I think I was just joking around. They made some sort of comment about one. The guy wasn't homeless, but he was just kind of from a poor country. Mm-hmm. And not a country. He's from Japan, but he's from a poor area, and wasn't exactly.
You were trying to be an asshole because I didn't really hear it. He was like, "Yeah, dude, this is some homeless guy. They're giving a shot, man, to come in there and fucking get knocked out, man." I was like, "What?"
Yeah, he was just. I think they also said basically like that he had, he had a day job other than fighting, which is not actually that uncommon for a lot of guys on the smaller shows and stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, like I said, dude, this is a damn good fight. It was, you know, close early on. These guys were standing. They banged a little bit. Then they went to the ground. You know, you claimed you loved this. So there were several attempts where they were, like, exchanging submissions and rolling through them and stuff like that and into other submissions. It was just, you know, very exciting. Almost a la, you know, Imanari is fighting Cage Rage, or the Yoshihiro Maeda, Miguel Torres fight that happened recently on the WEC. You know, sort of like that, guys, really, you know, exchanging submissions and stuff like that on the ground. But, you know, it started to become, you know, obvious, those it kind of wore on, that Takaro was, you know, the little bit better fighter. He was, you know, winning the stand-up battle. He was landing some very powerful shots. But, you know, Umanyama was, he's just a tough kid. He hung in there. He took it to the decision. But all three judges agreed that and awarded Takaro with the unanimous decision. You know, again, probably maybe the best fight of the night, you know. It was a very good fight.
Yeah, I mean, it was very evenly matched for the most part. I mean, yeah, Takaro kind of took advantage later, you know, in the fight, but Uniyaman, I don't want to try to pronounce it. You know, he was kind of a young guy. Doesn't have a ton of fights. He fights kind of for Strikeforce here in the U.S. Held his own pretty well against a much more experienced fighter. And this just, again, goes to show these two guys are featherweights. The featherweights never put on a bad show. You know, these lighter weight classes always have exciting fights. And, I don't think I've ever seen really a boring featherweight fight. And this certainly was not one here.
Yeah, definitely. All right, the next fight is Gerard Massassi taking on Dong Sik Yoon. Of course, this is the first matchup in the second round of the middleweight open weight grand. What the fuck am I talking about? The middleweight grand prix. I just called it the middleweight open weight grand prix, man.
Yeah, to crown it's to crown the middleweight champion as well. So
yeah. Okay. Anyway, so me getting confused there for a second aside. Let's talk about this fight. And it actually started kind of slow, dude. These guys kind of got tied up. I think, you know, Yoon had a standing Kimura attempt on, and Massassi pushed him back into a corner. And basically they stood there for like a good minute or so, you know, kneeing his hamstrings and stuff. The referee breaks him up, and, you know, Massassi was getting the better of the stand-up. You know, that was very evident. He was landing some knees. He was landing some good shots. Yoon goes down, and he tries several submission attempts. He does, you know, Masasi's able to defend against him.
Well, I mean, let's not downplay the dude. He had an armbar locked in, pretty much, and well, he was able to get out.
What, dude? What are you talking about, man?
Yeah, and got to
that's
that. Part,
that's
yeah.
How the round ended. But I guess well, let's go ahead and skip ahead. But yeah, you know, Dong Sik Yoon, who was getting, you know, pretty worked there in that first round. I mean, he was easily losing that round pretty decisively. He gets an armbar attempt on Massassi. He's really trying to work at it and pull that arm out. I don't think he fucking got out of it, though. I thought he just...
He rolled through.
He pulled the arm out. I thought the bell saved him, though.
No, I mean, if you read here, it says he has the position secured, but he can't free Masasi's grip. Masasi eventually escapes into side control. He had it extended, but he was able to escape into side control. Then he got out of it, but yeah. It was close. I mean, it was Dong Sik Yoon. I mean, he was getting dominated for the most part, but then he had to work on it for, you know, probably at least a minute or two, but he finally broke his grip and got it extended.
Yeah, he eventually, you know, he gets out of it, and he almost finished the fight there. So the second round happens, and basically Massassi just takes his back and spends a good 4 minutes 30 seconds with this guy in a body triangle, punching the back of his head, or to the side, I guess, because it blows the back of the head, or, you know, technically illegal, but not very exciting at all. Just weird. I mean, I've never seen some guy take a beating to the side and the back of his head that much for that long. I was just thankful that it was over. You know, early Massassi takes this unanimous decision.
You think perhaps the ref should have stepped in there and stopped that, you know?
Probably. I mean, he wasn't getting out. He was just so gassed and just getting beaten up on the back of the head, so.
Mm-hmm.
The next fight was Zelik Galisic.
Galisic, yeah.
Zelik Galisic. Taekin. Taekin. This fight basically never really takes place, hardly.
Oh, God.
Galisic goes for a takedown on Ken. Ken puts his arm down to try to brace it, and his elbow comes completely out of the socket and bends back.
His elbow pulls a Joe Theismann, basically.
Yeah.
If you're one of those sickos that like watching that kind of stuff, like if your favorite YouTube video is Sean Livingston's knee just bending in ways that no one should ever, you know, view a knee being bent, then you're going to want to look this up, because it was pretty sickening the way Taekin's elbow just kind of popped out of the socket.
Yeah.
The surprising thing was post-fight, Taekin, because it was immediately stopped, obviously.
He's like that guy that I told you, dude, that guy Shinya Oki took all the time, where he breaks that guy's arm, and then he wraps it around his leg literally like a fucking tie, like a bow tie. He's tying it up. And that guy, like, when they stopped the fight, dude, he was just like, he never even made one sound when his arm completely snapped in two and got wrapped around the other guy's leg. He didn't make one sound and just got up and calmly walked away.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
said, you know, we're stopping this.
Dude, Zelik Galisic, man, extremely upset that the fight ended like that. He was, like, he was just livid that it ended like that. I mean, I guess he did not want to win that way. Taekin had a smile on his face, really. I mean, he was taking it very well, taking it a lot better than I probably would have took it.
Yeah. Let's talk about this next fight. Of course, this is the one I was really looking forward to. Jacare taking on Jason Mayhem Miller. What about these entrances, dude? Two of the more elaborate entrances on this dream card. You know, do you like this, dude? The pro wrestling style gimmick, the entrances and stuff like that?
It's kind of fun. Miller came out with, you know, throwing the money around and stuff. Didn't he have some sort of mask on or something as well, I think?
I think so. It was kind of like a Jason mask or something.
Yeah, it was. And he was throwing the yens out, I think. It was yen probably thrown around. And, it's pretty cool. Then Jacare, of course, he comes out doing the gator chomp. Basically, just think Florida Gators. That's kind of his signature little, like, celebration. By the way, Jacare is, like, Portuguese, I believe, for it's a type of alligator. So that's why he does the alligator chomp. Both of them playing their entrance up very big. Apparently, there's a little bad blood between the two also in the pre-fight press conference or something. Miller had made some sort of comment about, I don't know, made some sort of derogatory comment, I think, towards Jacare. Jacare was not too happy about it. And he basically come out and whooped Jason Miller's ass for it. I mean, I think he basically controlled this entire fight, by my estimation.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was kind of impressed by one thing about Miller, though, man. Is that, you know, coming into this, they thought that this fight was going to take primarily on the ground like it did. You know, they were saying, hey, Jacare, this world-class jiu-jitsu guy, he's going to tap him out. That didn't happen. I mean, Miller showed some impressive defense. He hung in there. He got out a lot of submissions. You know, he was locked up in a couple of heel hooks at one point that he just kind of suffered through and got out of it. So, you know,
What about him throwing the thumbs up when he had that first heel hook locked in?
Yeah, I mean, that's just the type of guy he is, dude. He'll stop the showboat, you know, while something like that's going on.
And he wasn't doing too much showboating after it was over. Like I said, Jacare, even though he wasn't able to finish it, he basically was in complete control this entire fight. He really impressed me. I mean, I thought Jason Miller was a more well-rounded fighter, and I thought, obviously, Jacare the better grappler, but I thought Miller would be able to use his striking and stuff to, you know, tip this fight at his advantage, but not at all. Jacare, he was able to get him down and control the entire fight, and he won the unanimous decision.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a very impressive showing, but Jacare, again, a guy who's just started his MMA game, and he had, you know, that's a quality opponent, and a guy like a Jason Miller to basically dominate a fight like that and control it, you know, he looked very impressive. Let's talk about this next fight, though. Of course, this is the one everybody was really excited about. You know, they were going to, you know, all these people were quote-unquote, you know, thinking that it's Sakuraba that's going to die in that ring. Of course, we're talking about Sakuraba taking on Melvin Manhoef, or Manhoef, or however, which way you want to say it. Of course, Manhoef is from Holland, so everyone knows what that means. This guy likes to bang.
Let me just say, Melvin Manhoef, this man is a physical specimen. I mean, he just looks like a bad dude, and he certainly backs it up, too. I mean, he is cut. He is a chiseled, you know, 200... Well, he's fighting this at 185 here. Actually, he's fought also a lot at light heavyweight, too. He's a Sure Dog Fight Finder. List him as a 205-pounder, but... yeah, he's a very big guy from 185, certainly. Also got an impressive kickboxing record, too, from what I understand. So, yeah, he's a bad, bad man. Sakuraba.
Yeah, coming into this, basically everyone thought if Sakuraba didn't get this fight down, it was ending badly. This was going to be like a Sakuraba Vanderlei Silva 4 or something like that, you know. I mean, this is just going to end very badly for Sakuraba. So, and that's exactly what happens. Manhoef throws a high kick that Sakuraba actually blocks, but it's so powerful that he knocks him off his feet. Manhoef jumps on him. He starts raining in some punches. He grabs hold of Sakuraba's leg and literally manhandle, ragdoll, drags him out to the center of the ring to jump on him again and start landing some sick hammer fist. That completely knocks Sakuraba, you know, and we forgot to actually mention this, dude, but I'll say it now, then we can talk about it real quickly. As Stephen Quatros would say, he knocked Sakuraba on Queer Street, man, with some of those hammer fists, totally, you know, and this referee decides to get in there and save him. Sakuraba looks beaten and bloodied badly, man. I mean, this is a bad fight for him, dude. I don't like to see, you know, legendary fighters like him get beat down like that, do you, man?
Yeah, I mean, he just, you know, landed some that big kick that put him on, you know, put him down, and he basically grabs his legs to pull him away from the ropes. Just imagine grabbing like a, you know, 25-pound bag of flour from the bottom shelf of the grocery store, how you would just pull it out into the aisle. That's basically how he just grabbed Sakuraba by the legs, just jerked him out away from the ropes, and then just pounded him out with some devastating hammer fist. Melvin Manhoef, he looks pretty bad now. I mean, I'm really, you know, I think the cream of the crop has emerged really from this middleweight tournament. You know, there's some good, you know, some good looking guys. I think the way, you know, I would like to see an interesting matchup. What do you think about Jacare versus Melvin Manhoef, the striker versus the grappler? That would be very interesting to see those two guys go at it. Also, I mean, I think Manhoef versus Gerard Musasi would be a pretty good stand-up fight as well. Also, you know, Gleesick is a decent fighter. So there's some interesting matchups, but the two guys I think I would like to see in the finals would be Manhoef versus Jacare. Be a great styles clash, and it's shaping up to be a decent finals to this middleweight tournament that a lot of people would criticize for not having a lot of talent, you know.
Basically, yeah. All right, let's talk about, dude, what did you think about, let's see here. Oh, yeah, I forgot now. I was going to ask you about, what about that Queer Street comments, man? What do you think about that, dude?
Well, I mean, that's just, that's not the first time I'd heard that. I mean, you hear that all the time. You hear, you know, I'm pretty sure that, I think Boss Rudin threw out a Queer Street comment, you know, during this broadcast. You hear, you know, even Joe Rogan, he'll throw out a Queer Street comment. Probably not the most, politically correct or sensitive comment to make, to say somebody's on Queer Street, but, I wouldn't do it, you know, I don't think, you know, it's just one of those old-time sayings, I guess, you know.
Yeah, that, those old-timey sayings.
Yeah, you know, so it's kind of one of those things that's ingrained into the vocabulary of these mixed martial arts commentators. And when I heard it, I mean, I wasn't, like, offended in any way by it, you know. But then again, I'm not, you know, I guess I'm not a homosexual, so I guess maybe they would find it more offensive than me, but personally, like I said, it doesn't bother me at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, man, let's quickly again, since we're, you know, we don't have a lot of time to talk about this, but I did kind of want to touch on this since it is coming up. This Saturday, of course, the Ultimate Fight Night finale. We got the main event of that, of course, is Evan Tanner taking on Kendall Grove. I like this picture of Evan Tanner they got here. Of course, this must be an older picture of him because he basically looks like a hobo, a street bum right now, man.
Is that like Evan Tanner circa like 2003 back when he was?
Yeah, this is a very clean cut professional Evan Tanner. You know, he's got the short hair, clean cut, shaven. Clearly not the Evan Tanner of now. Of course, he's taking on Kendall Despada Grove. And we won't talk about all these fights. Let's talk about this one, dude. Like I pointed out to you, dude, I'm quickly becoming an Evan Tanner fan just for some reason. I like a guy that looks like a bum like that, man. I like a guy who, just lives life the way he lives it, dude. He's just going for it all the time, He wins a lot of money, Should he pay his bills? Nah. That ain't Evan Tanner, man. He's taking that shit to the blackjack tables. Okay, he's trying to double and triple that money. He's trying to get out of debt, in a couple of days instead of a couple of years, man.
He's the kind of guy that tries to ruffle through his couch to get a little bit of loose change to buy a jar of peanut butter.
By the way, dude, how could you not fucking get behind a guy that has to eat tuna fish sandwiches and shit, dude, and trains himself?
He self-taught. He just bought some instructional DVDs.
I'll just get this BJPN, the book of MMA knowledge or whatever it's called, man.
Mastering the Rubber Guard by Eddie Bravo or something.
He got Eddie Bartles Mastering the Rubber Guard, those DVDs, dude, and just, taught himself.
So break this fight down for me. Who you got here? You got Kendall the Spider Grove, or are you going with Evan Tanner, man?
Well, again, my sentimental favorite is Evan Tanner. He didn't look that good against Okami at all. That fight got off very slow, started slow, then he got knocked out with that jumping knee in the second round. But, Tanner's a veteran, dude. That was his first fight back. I definitely expect him to come in, looking better, a little bit better shape and stuff like that. And, he just needs this so bad, man. That's what I think, dude. I got to take a guy that, that needs that. And we're talking about Kendall the Spider Grove. Here's another guy that needs it very badly, too. He's lost two fights in a row. Of course, Patrick Cote, that's, I can understand that. But Jorge El Conquistador Rivera? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Okay, getting knocked out by that guy. Technical knockout. A minute 20. I'm not feeling that, man, okay? So, I just think Evan Tanner, the experience and stuff like that, to get him through this. I like Evan Tanner in that fight.
I will concur with you on that. I think Evan Tanner, he is a veteran. I mean, literally, his life almost depends on winning this fight. Losing to Yushin Okami is it's nothing to, be upset about. Yushin Okami is probably the top contender in that 185-pound division. He's a good fighter, he's beaten some, good competition, and I think losing to him isn't really that bad. Kendall Grove, on the other hand, losing to Jorge Rivera, that is something to kind of be embarrassed about. Now, you can always be surprised. Kendall Grove, young, hungry, he's going to want it awful bad, but I'm going to agree with you, go with the sentimental pick, Evan Tanner, to win this one.
Yeah, okay, the next fight, dude, I want to talk about, of course, is Diego the Nightmare Sanchez taking on Luigi Fiorotti. Fiorotti.
Yeah, Fiorotti.
Basically, dude, Diego the Nightmare Sanchez, okay, Diego Sanchez was a guy that was just tearing that UFC middleweight division, not middleweight, welterweight, what am I talking about? He's tearing that welterweight division up. I mean, this guy heavily hyped. He wins the Ultimate Fighter. He's undefeated. I think he had, a pretty sizable win streak in the UFC. I think it might have been six or so more fights. And then he runs into, Josh Koscheck, and Koscheck beats him. And then he runs into John Fitch, okay, and John Fitch beats him. And then now you're talking about a guy who's really down on himself. He goes through a rough patch. he comes back and dominates David Belkinen in UFC 82, man. I mean, you know, of course that was an undercard fight, but I went and watched that fight, and he was just fucking ragdolling this guy. He got on top of him. He was just pounding him out. He was like an animal, you know, the typical Diego that we all know from his win streak. You know, he looked like he was back. And he's taking on, Luigi Fibberati here, who, you know, the granny is coming off a win over Luke Kumo, and he did look pretty impressive in that. But I think, you know, Diego Sanchez is just on the next level. He's one of those guys that when you talk about the welterweight division, you're talking about a contender, even though he has lost two of those fights. I think he's definitely coming back, you know, strong, and he's going to look to, you know, take another march at that title shot. And, you know, I think anybody that gets in his way until he gets to those top-tier guys are going to be put down. So I like Diego Sanchez in this.
Again, totally agree with that. Diego Sanchez, you know, losing to John Fitch. Everybody's lost to John Fitch here recently. The guy's on a sick win streak. He's getting a shot against GSP. He's a really good fighter, a guy that a lot of people don't give enough credit to, I think. And then also Josh Koscheck, another guy, a top contender at, you know, welterweight. Again, no shame in losing to Josh Koscheck as well. I think we're going to see the old dominant Diego Sanchez, the guy that beat Carol Parisian, is going to be back. And I think he's going to take care of Luigi Fibberati. It'll be a decent little scrap, but yeah, I think Fibberati's just outmatched here by the Nightmare, who is just looking to get really back into serious contention at welterweight.
Yeah, so I mean, definitely you got to check out that this weekend Ultimate Fighter finale. Also, check out the Ultimate Fighter, the last episode this season, coming on Thursday. You definitely got to check that out because we're going to see – it's Wednesday, right?
Yeah, it's just Wednesday.
Yeah, okay,
Speaking of which, I mean, who you got here now? We know – who was it that – what's the guy's name that qualified for the finals last week? Crazy, dumb as –
Jesse Taylor.
Yeah, dumb as a rock, Jesse Taylor.
I probably got him against – well, I don't know, dude.
Here's what I'm thinking.
One of these guys are going to get kicked out, dude. I think it might be him. But basically, the big news is coming down. It's going to be CB Dalloway taking on Amir Salala.
Amir Sadal is his name.
Sadal, yeah.
I think there should be no reason why Amir should beat CB Dalloway. But I got a bad feeling that Amir is going to win this. CB's going to win it. And then he's going to be the one that gets kicked off the show. And it could end up – well, then, see, the thing is, though, should Amir be the guy that gets that shot? Or should it be Amir taking on – the guy that Jesse Taylor just beat, and they should have like some sort of last minute qualifier or something, decide who the guy that gets to go in, you know, will be or whatever. I don't know what to see how that works out. Should be interesting. I mean, I really hope it's not CB Dalloway, because I think of the entire show, I think he's personally the best fighter on the entire show. And I think, you know, Jesse Taylor's probably the second best fighter, but I would take CB over Taylor if that is the matchup. I'm just not that high on Amir, man. I don't think the guy is just a kickboxer, you know. I think he's got incredibly lucky to get as far as he's got in this tournament, man. To be honest with you, you know, I think he's just had some good matchups and he got a little luck on his side. I don't think he's at all a complete mixed martial artist. And if you're going to be a incomplete mixed martial artist, being just a striker with really no wrestling or jiu-jitsu skills is not the way to go, pretty much, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So let's hope that, you know, CB doesn't get thrown off, but I'm thinking he's going to be the one that gets kicked off the show. We'll have to see how that goes. I mean, no thoughts on, before we close it down here, no thoughts on the King, Spencer Fisher, and Jeremy Stephens? Good little lightweight scrap.
I could keep going into it, but you know, we got to make a cutoff point somewhere, and that's the two, you know, biggest names that they're talking about, you know, coming into that. Of course, besides the Ultimate Fighter finale, if they haven't.
That's the last fight that will be broadcast guaranteed. The rest are just, you know, preliminary fights that we may not see. You know.
Yeah. All right, man. So. let's go ahead and wrap this up again. I want to plug those. Check that out Saturday, the Ultimate Fighter finale. This Wednesday, check out the Ultimate Fighter. See what dumbass throws his career away in his life by kicking out that limousine window, and I'm sure he does something else. But, you know, let's throw out a couple quick plugs here. Of course, the podcast, MMAManUp.com. The live podcast site, live.MMAManUp.com. Of course, the ManUp inbox, where you can send all your feedback and, you know, just some viewer responses and feedback. Or just, you know, ask us a question or whatever. Anyway, that's ManUp, MMAManUp@gmail.com. But go ahead and plug your stuff there.
Yeah, obviously, No Gimmicks Needed is my pro wrestling podcast that Afton and I do. Afton, you know, extremely unprofessional on that podcast, basically. If you want to see me holding it down, doing some pro wrestling talk, and Afton does chip in every now and then between naps, I think. You know, he likes to get in some thoughts on that. We have a lot of good fun over there on No Gimmicks Needed. You can find that at ProWrestlingPodcast.com. And, of course, we do the live shows every Saturday, 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern time at live.ProWrestlingPodcast.com.
Yeah, but until next time, we'll be coming at you with a review of course, the Ultimate Fighter finale. Thank you for downloading, and thank you for listening.
The Ultimate Fighter!